Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as always, the day man to my night man and the ape man to my canned ham, it's Dan.
Good evening, Scott. I'm two-thirds ready to go for this bad boy, so let's knock her out.
Yes. Dan will be joining us for at least two of the three shows that we're going to be covering this evening. But we should bring in our other folks who are going to be covering all three shows this week. That we're on. So before we go any further, before I blithely blather into a lively lather, let's strike up the band for our STVD All-Star Squad, our little dynamic duo this evening. First, we have the Countess of Cosplay herself. It's Vicky.
Hi.
And she's joined by the Duke of Decay. It's Cade.
Hello, Starling City. I'm listening.
I'm going to punch you. Actually, that's very cool. Well, once again, we've come to fill your ear holes with our observations, our ruminations, and our occasional outright ramblings about the CWDC superhero shows. Like I said before, we're down to just a trio this week. And we're also short one fella here. Jason is not here. Dan, what's the deal with Jason this time around?
We tricked him into saying his name backwards, and he's currently residing in the fifth dimension until we decide we want to put up with his unique brand of dad jokes and... sniffles. Actually, I'm the one with sniffles, so what am I saying? But he's gone. Fuck him anyway.
What's funny with Jason, like, we didn't actually send him to the actual fifth dimension. We just put him in that old group from the 60s, the fifth dimension. So he's got to sing that one song by them over and over again. Anyway.
We'll explain that to you later, Vicky.
Or just go Google the fifth dimension, or YouTube, or karaoke, or something. Anyway, so even though we have plenty of time to ramble about crap right now, let's get started with our shows instead. Let's start off with the Maid of Might herself, and that would be Supergirl. Now, this week's episode was titled Homecoming. So, Kara and Mon-El, well, like, they totally did it. And I'm sure lots of folks like me were wondering, has she done it before? I'm going to go with yes based on her joke about breaking some noses while kissing. Now, I can make a beautifully dirty joke about how I suspect a couple of those noses, how they got really broken, but I'm going to move on instead, you know, because, you know, Vicky's here and all. Anyway, so Kara wants to keep it on the QT for the time being, so naturally Mon-El announces to the entire DEO that they're an item. I was actually hoping he would have said we totally did it, but, you know, whatever. Now, Wynn catches wind of some suspicious activity as the long-dormant Cadmus is running a convoy down a deserted road. Supergirl, John Jones, and a mostly irrelevant DEO task force converge upon the truck surrounded by three angry Uber drivers, who, like all idiot thugs, continue to waste perfectly good and doubtlessly expensive bullets on these flying aliens. Well, bing, bang, boom, Kara and John decimate the Cadmusians and discover Jeremiah Danvers is being held prisoner in the back. Now, back at the DEO, Mon-El appears to be the only one thinking that a guy who's been in the clutches of a top-secret evil organization just might possibly be up to no good. But try telling that to either Danvers' sister, and after mild awkwardness at the DEO, which bloomed into douche-chill-inspiring cringing at the big homecoming dinner at Kara's place, we're left wondering if Mon-El will be able to resist the massive told-you-so, which at this point seems inevitable. Now, even while Jeremiah's got the DEO drones trying to track down some nuclear fusion bomb that's been powered by the collected energy of Kara's heat vision from earlier this season, it becomes more and more apparent he's at best a double agent, and at worst, we discover that he's actually got some cybernetic enhancements himself. Perhaps he's the real cyborg Superman. Now, he bests John, who apparently can't remember to use his phasing abilities half the time, in the most obvious instances. And by the way, can't the Martian Manhunter also turn invisible, or am I imagining that? I can't remember now.
Anyway, yeah.
There you go. So, he also chokes Gwen a little bit before making off with some downloaded info from the DEO servers. Well, by the end, we learn that the info is actually a registry of all the aliens. Wow, how timely is this show right now? And the Danvers girls are sad. They're damaged, but they're kind of pissed as well, because this apparently changes everything. But hold the celebration. I don't think they were talking about the writing staff or the casting director. Now that's about it, outside of some cutesy flirty stuff between Wynn and Lyra, whatever her name is, and another blessed week without the Guardian. Ah. Although Kara does actually earn a paycheck at Catco, because she rarely seems to be on the job. I still can't figure that one out. But that leads to another question I'll save for a dumbass observation later in our discussion here. Okay, so let's tackle the first big thing of this episode, which would be the return of Jeremiah Danvers and, you know, special guest star Dean Cain, former Superman himself. You know, basically, even if this was as predictable as all get out, does that really matter? You know, were there any, like, good or bad scenes that really stuck with you? Story points, acting, chemistry, whatever you want to talk about here. And I'd like to start this off with Vicky.
I was really excited to see Jeremiah again. Just because... Sorry, I lost my... just because, you know, that's something obviously they've been teasing forever. And so, I don't know how I feel about him turning out to be a double agent. I think it was a little bit disappointing because, but I mean, inevitable because as much as we might have liked to believe that he might not have been changed by being with the DEO for so long, I mean, come on. Very few people are that tough. I think your assertion that he's the real cyborg Superman is better.
Right. And I guess you meant Cadmus, not DEO, but that he's been with for so long.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's what I meant. Sorry.
I knew what you meant. Yeah. I don't think there could have been anyone watching who didn't assume that was going to be the case. Even if you hadn't seen any ads for the show, it's like, yeah, that's what's going to happen. I mean, come on. But I think this becomes a question of, despite it being obvious or predictable, sometimes that's okay. I mean, how many Twilight Zone episodes has one seen? I know not you, because you've like seen like two in your life or something, but other people. Some great Twilight Zone episodes are incredibly obvious where they're going, but you still enjoy them. Of course, they're from 50 years ago, so maybe we cut them more slack. But I'm just wondering if, despite the predictability, if people still enjoyed the storyline or how, you know, Dean Cain fit into the show right now. So
I've got this. I was spoiled on the first season of Game of Thrones, so I knew what was going to happen in their episode 9 like the whole time. But wow. For me, like I didn't watch, you know, until a few years later, because, you know, I never get around to anything. But I knew what was going to happen the whole time. But since it was executed well, the tension was like still there for me, because I didn't know how it was going to happen or why. So. This wasn't as good as that, but it was still executed really well, and they managed the tension good. So even though it was predictable and cliche and all that stuff, it was still, you know, they maintain a good level of tension, despite the fact that Dean Cain can't act like worth a shit. it's like, who is this Canadian that they've cast here? This guy is terrible. Ugh.
It did not help.
It wasn't great, but you know, whatever. It wasn't enough to detract from the episode too much. It just kind of stood out with the greatest dialogue delivery.
I think despite his, let's be nice and say shortcomings, what I think works is it makes the whole Cadmus thing just a little bit more interesting. You know, it just adds one more aspect to it that makes them just a little bit more, you know, ooh, evil, insidious. But kind of, I mean, and maybe in a bit of a mustache twirling way, but who cares? It's kind of fun. It's like the Supergirl's version of like Hydra or something. Not really Hydra, but you know what I mean. You know,
right.
All these shows have to have those evil organizations. It's always been the thing. And this is as close as they get to on this planet, I guess, so.
Plus, maybe Dean Cain wasn't a bad actor. It just was like his character was like acting like, you know, in a specific fashion, and he like really wasn't into it because he was fucking his family over. So, you know, maybe it was just kind of like a weird performance that just kind of came off. It's a little odd, but maybe he wasn't terrible. He probably was, but maybe not.
It's hard to say. I tend to have a very hard time judging the acting of most of the people on all the shows that we talk about on this podcast. Because just the nature of how these shows are put together, how they're written, how they're directed, outside of your occasional Kavanaugh moment or whatever, it's really hard to like pinpoint. So like, wow, that was a really well acted piece, you know. So then when someone isn't the most skilled performer, I do think it tends to stand out just a little bit more. It's like, oh god, it might as well be one of those Canadian extras, you know, subbing for someone here, which they seem to all the time. Kay, did you want to say anything more about Mr. Cain here and the whole Jeremiah Danvers situation?
No, I feel you guys covered it.
Oh, okay, then we'll move right on to Cadmus, then. Like I was saying, because now you've got a legitimate trio of villains, I guess, which I guess we did have briefly before. I forgot about Metallo until they blew him up, although I still think somehow they'll bring him back, I think. But, you know, you got your Lillian Luthor, you got the idiotic cyborg Superman, which makes no sense, and Jeremiah, who at least would make sense, at least in a, you know, nod to the viewers kind of a way. I'm trying to figure out what the plan is, both what Cadmus wants to do now, you know, as far as are they just looking to eliminate all the aliens, but I'm more curious about, they seem to have made a deal with Jeremiah, and I'm wondering what that is. And could the deal possibly be that they'll whack all the aliens except Kara, and that somehow she would be spared? But how would that deal work? So I'm that's like the one little mystery here that I was kind of at least reasonably intrigued by, because I was trying to figure out, is that what it is? I mean, why would she even go along with that? So let's see if what you guys had to say about any of that stuff, if anything. So if you had nothing to say about the other thing, Kay, do you want to say something about that?
Yeah, this is actually, I like the idea of these shows work better when there's more than one villain, usually, because then you can kind of spread some of that villainy out. You don't have one person you can focus on. This helps because you have Lillian, you have Jeremiah, so we can lose a little focus of Hank Henshaw and just basically make him the muscle. We never have to talk to him, hear him talk or postulate or anything, really. You have two other people who can do that, so he can just kind of sit off in the background with his weird eye and be like all menacing back there. We don't have to actually deal with him anymore with these two being in the lead at that point. As far as what their plan is, yeah, it just seems to be getting rid of aliens. I mean, but if you put aliens on a ship, what's your end goal after that? You just put them out in space and hope they don't come back at some point? So I'm waiting to see what they do more with that.
Well, what they're doing is they're going to build this big wall around the planet. I mean, that's what this show is about right now. It's really kind of hard to ignore that. That's really what the show is about. So it's kind of funny that they're doing that. But, you know, yay. Dan, any thoughts on this, or any mocking you want to make before we go any further?
Oh well, I thought it was kind of interesting that their plan, I mean, it was just some kind of like diversion, I guess, so they could get the alien registry. But I liked how their plan was just like, you know, get everybody to go to this, you know, nuclear bomb site or whatever. But like they're obviously filming in Gorilla City again, so I was like, oh sweet, they must have just like all went there one day and just like filmed in the same section of forest for like, you know, a month straight. Just did like had every actor for all the shows show up, because I'm sure we're going to see more filming in Gorilla City Forest in whatever shows we haven't seen it in yet. Maybe Arrow, yeah.
I wonder if that's the forest they're using on the 100. Although at least on the 100, it actually looks like a forest, so I'm not really sure. Anyway,
well, shot in Vancouver.
Yeah, but it's a better show.
Well, you know, but it wasn't the worst plan in the world. I mean, it wasn't just like outright dumb.
No, actually, let's move on to what I found dumb about it. It wasn't the plan. I'm getting a little tired of the repeated, like, Mon-El is kind of like the boy who cried wolf on this show now, you know, over and over. Like, he seems, the one who they kind of set up to be kind of the big dumb lug from whatever, Dax and whatever, seems to be the guy who seems to be more aware of things than Supergirl, or in this case, Alex was. The whole Alex thing was like, really annoying to me in this episode, you know, and until she has a little breakdown.
It was bad.
Because it's not the actress's fault per se. She's given to work with, but again, it's one of those things that makes you realize when you watch, you know, better programming. There's not much nuance here, and it's just everything is just, you know, this or this. They get very one dimensional. Or barely two-dimensional at times. And it becomes, for lack of a better way to describe it, it becomes very soap opera-y to me when you see very stock characters on a soap opera. And I'm not talking about relationship stuff. I don't care about... in fact, I'll even say the moment with Alex and Maggie towards the end was probably her best moment on the episode, quite frankly. But everything leading up to that and her just and the way she treats her sister, because her sister wants to take a moment just to consider another possibility. It's one of those things that a better writer could have really made this really something special, and instead it just came off really. I liked everything else about the episode, really, but that really was like something that was really dragging for me personally.
I think the problem is, like, we're used to seeing characters that are, like, usually reasonable intelligence. So then when they have, like, a script like this where, like, the neat characters that act in a certain way and they just have the characters act stupid, it's kind of, like, hard to sell the entire thing. You know, whether it's, like, the Enterprise crew or, like, you know, Mulder and Scully or whoever, if you just, you know, for in this case it was, you know, her, Alex, just, you know, just acting, you know, just dumb, just stupid, and just kind of makes it hard to, you know, get in. It just makes the whole thing fall apart. You just pull one string and the whole thing just goes to shit. So,
yeah.
Well, like the whole, like, it's referenced, like, the DEO, like, Megan is put in a prison cell, Mon-El's put in prison cell. Anyone else who walks into the situation is immediate distrust, even if they might know them, but they just welcome him in. It's like, that doesn't seem like anything like you've shown them to do just because you knew this guy, what, 15 years ago?
No. But you figure out they're going to give him a psych test first.
Oh, yeah. That's going to do something. And also, why is it like 45 minutes in that John realizes he can't read him telepathically? He hasn't tried to do that once before.
Yeah, that already. Thank you for bringing that up.
He just did this. He was like, wait a minute, I can't read you. What do you mean, the minute John would have met him, John would have been, I'm trying to read him.
Can I just, now, I love that you brought that up, can I just give me like six, it goes off of something I mentioned in the recap, just give me like 60 seconds to have just an inspired rant right now. Hey, you guys, could you please remember all the actual abilities John Jones has, and why doesn't he ever use them here? Like his telepathic abilities, he should be doing that all the freaking time. There are so many situations they wouldn't be in if you just, like, you know, clicked on his freaking brain and would have figured out stuff. And the other stuff, I mean, like I said, I remember he can turn invisible. Have they shown him do that on the show? Hardly at all, if at all. I don't even remember at this point. He should be doing it all the time. It can save on effects because you don't even see him. You don't have to worry about CGI. Why does he forget the phase? He should have been phasing in and out during that whole fight. He should not... John Jones should never get fucking punched out, you know, because he's like, it's like the Flash forgetting how to run. It annoys me. It really.
It's that whole thing that superhero shows do where they willfully ignore a power a hero has because at a moment they don't need them to have that to make their story work. It's like, stop doing that.
Yeah. It's like having a show where you have someone named Firestorm on him and he never gets to be. Never mind. he's like, he's never Firestorm. He's like, you know, he's like weak drizzle. I don't know what that is. Anyway, was there anything else? What else?
Yeah, I didn't think they needed to like make this, you know, I mean, they were trying to make us feel like, you know, oh, Mon-El's like smart, you know, he knows what's going on this time, and like everybody else is just dumb. Because after his moment of just like the dumbest thing ever in the beginning of the episode, when he tells everybody at the DEO that they're dating, it's just like, we all liked him after that. They didn't need to like, you know, make him like the good guy for the rest of the episode and everybody else dummies.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I don't know if it's an inconsistency or not, but on one hand, I mean, I like the actor who plays Mon-El. He's fine. He's likable. He doesn't make me wince when he delivers a line, whatever. And they sometimes they give him some funny stuff to do or some interesting stuff to do. Do I think he's being as well utilized as he could be? Not really. You know, he's almost become like the girlfriend role on the show. So
yeah.
Maybe in a weird way, it's like, hey, look at that. You know, it's equal rights. So he gets to have the schlubby part on this show. But Mon-El, I mean, just, and I don't want to bring any of the comic book knowledge into this. That's neither here nor there. But there's more you can do with that character. And again, this is something that's indicative of all these shows is, they don't really spend a lot of time trying to really develop a lot of the supporting players as much as they should. And I think every one of these shows would benefit so much more if they really took the time to do that. And it's annoying on these shows because we watch so many shows that are on cable channels or whatever, which have much shorter episode runs. You know, these shows have anywhere from 18 to 23 episodes. They've got a lot more time. We've seen plenty of filler. You know what? Use some of that filler to develop some of these characters and make them more interesting and make us want to follow them more. And I think these shows always kind of fall short on that, unfortunately. If that makes any sense.
No, it totally does. But even on the same network, you can have shows like The 100 or iZombie where you have fleshed out characters that have motivations that you understand, and you can see where they, and when they do things, you're like, I know why they did that. These shows really have no excuse when other shows on your same network can do that with the same amount of shows you have and do long stories over seasons and do these things. That's the thing. They have no excuse for what they do.
Right. They can't. Here's the thing. Although we a couple weeks ago, I think you were the one to bring it up. We were kind of slamming the CW relationship thing, whatever. Which, quite frankly, I think that should really be a Greg Berlanti thing rather than a CW thing.
I was directing it more at the superhero shows, not CW as a whole. Yeah.
Because the shows that you just mentioned, like The 100, like iZombie, and like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and I haven't seen Jane the Virgin, but I'm sure it would apply to that show as well, because I've heard nothing but good things. These are shows that deal with a lot of characters, so I never want to hear... I hate when people complain about Arrow, like, oh, they don't know how to handle so many characters. Like, have you watched The 100? way more characters on The 100, and they do a much better job, etc., etc. And I wish they could have, like, a special week at the CW where maybe everybody trades writing staffs. Because I would love to see, like, the staff of, like, you know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend do Supergirl, or, you know, or The 100 do Arrow, or something like that. That would be just to see how things change and actually probably get better. Because that's the thing I want to see happen on these shows more than anything else. Upgrade your writing staffs, guys, and I think we could end up with much better shows as a result of it. Why am I being so negative? I wasn't expected to be negative. Sorry about that. Also, bring back Cat Grant already. God damn it. Anyway.
Yeah, at least for a bit. Come on.
Yeah, I just realized that's why we spend next to no time at CatGo, except when we want to see, you know, Snapper Bald over there. But other than that, it's like we're never there.
Okay, that's a fun fact. The one character on the show they really took time and developed and made something we really care about isn't on your show anymore.
Yeah. Way to go.
Well, to be fair, you might remember Vicky is kind of tired of seeing strong women on these shows, so, I mean, probably a nice break for her.
That is true. I do.
Thanks, Vicky. Thanks a lot.
I do recall her saying that oftentimes. Okay, do I get the feeling we can move right on to the scorecards then?
Scorecard time.
Excellent. So, Vicky, lead us off with your grade for Supergirl.
I'm going to give it a 3. It was a significant downturn from last week for me.
This is going to be funny. Cade?
I'm going to give it a 3.5. I'll give it a little bit more. It wasn't the worst they've done this season, but it wasn't even close to the best.
Dan?
I'm going to give it a 4. I actually thought that they executed the episode much better than I'm used to for them, and it's probably it is the highest episode ranking I've gave in a Supergirl episode up to this point, so I'll give it a 4. I think they did a pretty good job.
Well, believe it or not, I'm actually going with Dan on this one. Outside of Alex being an annoying pain in the ass for most of this episode, I really liked it, so I am also going to be giving it a 4. Ooh, I love the disagreement. How often do I give a grade higher than Vicky? How long does that ever happen?
I don't think that's ever happened.
No, it has to happen.
Oh, yeah, you've given a 6.
Yeah,
you gave it your 6 at one point.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
6. Anyway.
Yeah, because Effie also gave a 5 before I did.
Oh, whatever. Ruin the podcast.
Well, now it's not special at all, is it?
Great. Podcast is over, people. bring back Jason. Anyway.
That's crazy talk.
I give that comment a 1. Anyway, so let's get up to some monkey shines now with The Flash. Now, this was the second part of the 2-parter. I think last week was Attack on Gorilla City, so this week was Attack on Central City. Now, All seems happy and content in Flashland. No one's dwelling on whether Iris is going to be skewered like a toothpick through a cream puff on what I presume is now less than 3 months away, according to the TV schedule. Instead, Barry's making like the head cook at IHOP. Wally and Jesse are planning their future together on Earth 1 after dropping that bomb on the proverbial tight-lipped Harry Wells. HR is continuing the new CW tradition of making episodes feel like they were released in the wrong week in regards to any holidays, with his Valentine's-esque Friends Day nonsense. And Joe West is wondering if he can catch a Law & Order marathon on cable so he can remember what being a cop used to be like. And then Gypsy shows up and inexplicably starts zapping everybody until Harry blasts her with one of those ray gun thingies you'd think should really be on hand for every episode. After locking her up in the Star Labs Gitmo, should we call it Flashmo? I'm not sure. Gitmeta? Anyway. Forget it. They figure out that she was sent as a puppet of mind control by Gorilla Grodd. And then we see the Groddster himself, who for some reason has decided to marshal his vast CGI forces on the other side of some valley or canyon or whatever across from Central City. So, Grodd is back, and as Barry notes, he is continuing to evolve and get more dangerous every time. So now he's considering killing the big ape. I'm guessing there has been no Harambe situation on Earth 1. But Iris, another CW reporter who rarely seems to be on the job, tries to talk him out of it, even countering his not entirely unreasonable argument, but Ollie kills people all the time. I mean, seriously, the dude killed 55 people in season 1. You can look that shit up, it's no lie. Anyway, but Harry is the one who lays the convincing smackdown on him, simply saying he can find another way. In between some dubious flirting that borders on harassment between Cisco and Gypsy, as well as Harry trying to play the "I don't have that much time left" card with Wally, even if the closest that comes to the truth is in the grand scheme of the universe, because none of us have much time left in that case, but Wally just buys it instead of asking, so what's wrong with you? But Jesse, who's clearly the smarter speedster, knows right away her dad was BSing the fast and clueless over there. But getting back to the A-plot, or is that an A-plot, I don't know, or did I use that stupid joke last week, I apologize, a plan is devised to battle the now nuclear-enabled Grodd. For some reason, it takes two Breachers, Vibe and Gypsy, to bring Solivar to Earth 1, so we get some serious ape-on-ape action here, and I mean fighting action, don't be disgusting out there. But Flash stops Solivar from killing Grodd, instead agreeing to keep the big ape on Earth 1, so it's much easier for him to reappear in future episodes. So, a happy beginning seems to have a happy ending. Barry proposes to Iris, which sounds a bit much, considering they've got some other issues to deal with before making some long-term future plans, but, you know, whatever. And now it looks like Wally and Jesse might move in together, which also sounds like a bit much, considering that kind of state of their relationship, but, whatever. Oh yeah, and at the end, Wally zips off to some Big Belly Burgers, and then he runs into Savitar. The end. So, much like last week, I think our first topic is going to be the big ape himself, Grodd, returning to Central City. So you can look at what his plan, if you want to call it that, or what kind of fun or action we had, or what kind of letdown we might have also experienced, since this is a show that has at most a third, and actually more likely a quarter, of the budget of your typical Game of Thrones episode, since we mentioned Game of Thrones before. So, Cade, why don't you start us off talking about Grodd?
I'm not sure how I feel about Grodd in this episode. It seems like Grodd wants to conquer. He wants to take control. Even if he figured out they would have stopped the nukes, if his plan really is nukes, because at the end it seemed like when the nukes fell, he's like, we'll do it, we'll just do it ourselves. So his plan was to blow up this city instead of conquering it. I'm not really sure on this super ape's genius mind, blowing up cities is really the best way to go about what he wants. And maybe they didn't relay information properly, but it did seem like that was his first goal, and if that didn't work, then he would just invade with his ape army. But what was he going to do with his ape army once he blew up some cities? What exactly were they going to take over? Dirt?
Well, I will point out, in defense of Grodd, that you can actually pretty much say that about most any supervillain plan, or pretty much like every James Bond villain plan or whatever. Like, so wait, what's your plan after you blow up whatever city? You know, it's like, what's the point of this? I mean, where I would have went to knock his plan is, okay, if you're going to go nuclear, which it's debatable whether that was even a necessary thing to put into this episode at all. okay, are you going to be able to set that bomb off and then get the hell out of there? Because if you're not, you're going to run into some problems yourself, and you don't get your little breacher with you. So I was a little confused by that. I thought the plan was just, I don't know so much about conquering. I guess it would amount to conquering. I thought he just wanted to go up there and just, like, rip everybody the hell apart. You know, just trash the joint. It's because this is all about revenge and just, you know, whatever. It wasn't about he was going to rule there. I think he just wanted just to destroy everything. So maybe that's what led to the bomb idea. But the nuclear bomb thing just never makes sense. I don't care if it's Bane in a stupid movie or this show. It never really works for me.
I think what worked better was when he actually went to the city and just started destroying things. Like,
yeah,
pretty much. It's pretty obvious. They would have wrecked the town. The three speedsters were not enough to stop that army.
No.
They would have accomplished it. So that would have been plan A. And, like, if that failed, then I'd blow everything up. I think just the order of his plan would have been different.
I think what I fear with this, and this happened, and speaking, I guess it's from a writing perspective, but not exactly. They let budget influence the storyline because if the big plan is he's got this bomb, he's going to set off, then we don't have to have several minutes of, like, you know, hundreds of CGI gorillas trashing the city and whatever, like we wanted a city, because that's going to be so much money. And I was like, no, because they're going to blow up the place. No, that's not what we want to see. I'd rather just have scenes of just Grodd saying stuff, you know? The bomb thing, I agree, was lame. I do agree with that.
And but it was nice to see Grodd wrecking some things. That was and him getting in the final fight with Solovar. That was fun to see those two at least go at it for a bit.
You can continue, but then Dan was about to say something.
Oh, that's all I had.
Yeah, I definitely could. You could feel the hand of the not CGI budget going on there when, like, the gorilla attack ended up being just like all the gorillas act like all concentrated on one, like, 2-lane road. And that's like all they did, just all, you know, attack the same street for some reason.
Well, you mean it's like the first Thor movie, which had a budget of, like, you know, hundreds of million, and yet they spend the whole time fighting on two blocks of some shitty little town.
I don't even remember what happened in either of those movies.
That's one of the reasons I fucking hate when people even like that movie. It's like, well, he's a god of thunder and he's fighting like in two blocks in this little hick town. The movie takes place there. It was ridiculous. So like, that kind of reminded me with the gorillas here. Like, I was like, really? This is all it is? But at least I understand why they have the budgetary concerns. They just I'm always like, guys, if you know that's the issue, again, I hate to be Mr. Repetitive here, but it works for a show like The Flash. If you know that's the situation, then write a different story where you can get around that, but where it's not like lame. You know, just you were able to do this better before. You know. I don't care. Just come up with something better. It pisses me off.
Yeah, the Thor stuff happening in Oklahoma, I mean, that was based on a comic storyline a few years before the movie, and the comic was a lot more, I guess maybe it just didn't port over really well, but it worked, you know, that the stuff going on in Oklahoma was pretty decent in the comics. It just didn't quite,
I understand, but they didn't spend the $150 million to produce the comic, so I don't care. But in a movie, it's like, that's it? It just doesn't play well, you know, and that's why it was just kind of, like, lame. We go from Asgard to, you know, a gas station and a cafe, and, you know, no defending that. Of course, it wasn't as bad as Darkwell. Darkwell was even worse. So, but anyway, Vicky, did you have any Grodd thoughts before we move on to the next thing?
Yeah, no, I agreed with a lot of your criticisms. Though I do think I enjoyed Grodd this week. More than I did last week when I was, you know, talking about my qualms about it. I don't know. I just think, I enjoyed it better. So yeah, no, while I had my, you know, quibbles with the, why would he go with the bomb first? I almost feel like he was using that as a distraction,
I think I may more agree with you about this, because I'm not anti-Grodd here. I enjoyed whatever time we had with him in both episodes. I think on the CGI level, he's gotten better from every time they brought him back. The stuff with the armor, I mean, that looked really good.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with that. Again, this is a show, because, God, we're talking about a show that's budget at most is like $1.5 million. You know? This isn't a $5 or $6 or $7 million budget show. We're talking about a show that's got an under $2 million budget. It's usually around $1 to $1.5 million per episode. And obviously, most of that goes into, you know, Grodd for this episode. You know, and Canadian extras, I'm sure. Because I hear they're expensive. So I liked how he looked. I liked hearing the voice. It's just the bomb thing was kind of lame, and I wish they just hadn't bothered with that. But it wasn't a serious detraction for me. I still kind of enjoyed it, and I'm glad they gave us a two-parter. Even if, as Dan pointed out last week, they maybe should have figured out a better way to reveal the cliffhanger. Although when I watched it again, it didn't bother me as much. But I do get, it was like the pacing was off. They took too long to get to that, I thought. But I enjoyed it here, I think.
I also really enjoyed that fight between Grodd and Solivar. I was kind of happy that we got more of him than just a little bit we'd gotten the week before.
Yes, it's Keith David. Use him more. Excellent.
Yeah.
I was kind of bummed that I essentially, from seeing Keith David's name in the opening credits and then, like, you know, being 30-some minutes in and they hammered home, you know, Barry shouldn't kill. I mean, they pretty much telegraphed how the episode was going to end just, you know, from seeing Keith David's name in the credits there for me. So that was, you know, a bit of a, oh, whatever.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I
watched too much TV, so that, you know, that's also a factor.
I remember in my lifetime being spoiled many times by noticing opening credit names Lost and being like, oh, yeah. I guess Jack's dead father's going to show up in this episode or something like that. But to take a page from something to the way you were speaking about something earlier, I get the feeling that if this had been a comic book story, Solivar would have been on the cover. Fighting Grodd, yeah. Anyway. So you wouldn't know if this was on a newsstand. And plus, it was a comic book.
Beating each other up.
And the girls would have been ripping the city apart. However, there's one moment that we didn't mention, which is what made me really like the Grodd stuff this episode, that I thought they did really well. And it was really kind of oddly tense, or maybe not so oddly. The scene when he's taken over Joe West.
I was about to say, getting to see Jesse L. Martin do the Grodd thing, and then he was basically just going to kill Joe right in front of everybody. That was a Grodd moment at its best right there.
I personally think that was the, even though Grodd wasn't, you know, quote unquote on screen, that to me was the best Grodd moment. And the fact that he was going to take out Barry's, well, basically his Barry's other dad, pretty much. And he fires the gun.
His only parental figure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He says, I know how to break you. This is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah. So I just think that moment for me, as far as the Grodd Barry, villain hero, I know he's not technically the arch nemesis. I guess that would still be Reverse Flash for him. But that just raised Grodd up a couple bars, I thought, to make him, this is significant. And of course, we know it's not the first time Grodd has messed with Joe West anyway, so it's kind of a running thing with those two.
There was a small thing in that scene they did well, was also Barry reacting as if he might not be able to stop the bullet or get Joe out of the way in time. It was a small moment of doubt his face, which helped sell that scene more than if he was just like just charged to stop it. If you think maybe Barry has doubt, it does give you a little doubt. For a second, I thought, they're going to kill Joe. What the hell? I thought that maybe the moment that might happen.
No, that's not due for another 7 or 8 episodes.
Yeah, I was going to say for a split second, I thought that they might actually do that.
I believe, according to like other group pages I frequent from time to time, the drum beat is getting louder as far as people thinking that they're going to be killing Joe West off, which is really disturbing me. Ugh. The more I read about it and the more it makes sense. And no. So, we will see. But, you know, like we said in a previous podcast, or I don't know who said it, maybe it was me, maybe it was someone else. It's like, well, you know, Barry's got to lose a parent every season. So
yeah.
Joe would be the next one to go, I guess.
Maybe he's the only one left.
Maybe they could bring back, no, he's dead already. Okay, so speaking of, well, not really, maybe not exactly father figures, but also mirroring how we formatted this last week, I want to get a little bit into Mr. Kavanaugh once again. This week it was the two faces of Tom Kavanaugh, which I think provided a lot of fun, I think, for all of us. And then you also, the Wally-Jesse relationship issue, whatever, which I think most, if not all of us, were kind of like, about last week. I'm curious to see if our opinions on that improved any from the previous week. So, since I was just chatting with you, Vicky, I'll let you go first, and you can talk about Kavanaugh or Wally and Jesse or Bennett or both or however you want to talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, I love the HR Harry stuff. It's gold, just how every 5 seconds Harry's reminding him that he's an idiot and he contributes nothing to the team. I think when we were talking earlier, just that opening scene where Harry spits into his coffee, that was gold. For I was very surprised, you know, that Harry was so very like okay, just accepting that Jesse was like, okay, I'm going to move here. But then obviously should have known better because this is Harris, you know, Harry we're talking about. And he's nasty and surly and doesn't take anything well. And had to just take one last attempt to get his daughter to stay with him.
That was... I can't make up my mind how I felt about that. It's just something so... I mean, obviously, there's the whole manipulative side of it. But yeah. There was just something... It was both manipulative and silly at the same time. Although, I do love... Doesn't Jesse, like, confront him right when he's in the middle of something, which is, like, just a little bit more important, if I recall?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she does.
I can't remember what it was, but I remember it was...
Totally... When they're about to, try and get... Joe's memories back from when Grodd was controlling him.
That's right. That's what it was. It was like the, hey guys, a little busy here. But did you appreciate the Wally Jesse stuff more this week than what we were given last week? Or was it still as dopey as it was last week for you or what?
It was a little bit better than last week. It was a little more just, it wasn't quite as dopey, but I don't know. They're just kind of for me. I mean, they're cute, but I don't know. It might have just been the way that the stuff was written, but I don't know. It just doesn't do a whole lot for me.
I can agree with that. I mean, for me personally, it wasn't as annoying as it was the previous week, where we were just like, this is the most blatant time-filling crap that we've had to sit through in any of these episodes. Now, and maybe it's because the whole Kavanaugh connection made it a bit more palatable. Although, are they really talking about living together? Because they've probably...
Yeah, I thought that was very quick.
I mean, I'm no prude. You know, not by a long shot, but I barely get the sense that these kids have done much of anything, and all of a sudden they're acting like they're going to move in together? It's like, no, that should be a problem. Plus, I'm not really clear on how old they are. Does anyone know what the ages are of Wally and Jesse are supposed to be on the show? I mean, I know technically they're supposed to be adults, so they're I think they both passed 18, but
yeah,
I don't know if they're much past older. 18. Yeah, I don't get
that. Because I feel like...
Wally's been in college for a while.
Yeah, Wally's in college.
For 3 or 4 years.
So maybe 20? At the most?
Curious. That sounds right. I could see him being 20. And so maybe she's... And I guess we'll just say, oh, they must be the same age, because anything else would be weird, I guess, on the show. Still, they've hardly spent any real time together. Much less stuff,
yeah.
You know. Well, you know. So
if this was a cable show, they'd be like, you know, figuring out from crazy ass speed bang and stuff, you know, with their power. So it's not going to happen at CW.
Oh, the one area where speed might not come in handy. But maybe some speed weed. Anyway, so beyond that, I mean, was there anything else we wanted to cover? I mean, certainly there were other things that happened. I mean, we could get a little bit into the Barry and Iris stuff, but I don't think we really want to. But like the Cisco Gypsy stuff, or maybe the ending, because then there's that. Dan, since you were just talking, is there anything else that occurs to you? Since I think you just finished watching it just before we started podcasting.
Yeah, I liked how HR threw like a giant life day party for them. I'm just going to call it that. I know it wasn't called that, but I'm going to call it life day. And that was kind of cool and fun. Just obnoxious. And all those weird cards that he was writing out.
The cards. The stupid cards.
Speaking of life day, even though I know it wasn't called that, I liked how Gypsy called Luke Starkiller. I thought that was a nice touch, and the fact that Cisco just like reacted to it without saying anything.
Yes, I thought that was a great little alternate Earth reference there. That on their planet, apparently they went with the original Star Wars. I was very pleased with that. That was one of their better pop culture references they've done on the show in a while. Since sometimes it can be a little clunky. Dan, maybe you appreciate it in the way that I did. I also like the fact that they're watching Casablanca later on, and we get that reference. Oh, yeah. There having been numerous world wars in the multiverse version of Earth, too. So some of the points is a bit lost on her. But Wally won major points with me personally, because he's a fan of the classic of all classic films there. He was kind of doing what I used to do with people back in the day, like, you haven't seen this movie? Okay, we can't go out any longer unless you sit and watch this movie. That's how I'll know if you're the one. Yeah, but they never.
Yeah, went. Well, I spent the night at Scott's, and I fell asleep watching that movie because I was so fucking tired, but he did make me watch it the first night I was there.
Right, that's.
And it was the first time I watched it, too, because, I'm
and that's how, about these. And that's how we got secretly married that night.
Yep, well. Guess, better than nothing, I reckon. 2017, whatever it takes.
Guess where we put the ring. Anyway.
Vicky, I'll tell you about that later.
Oh, boy. And yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't really feel the need to say anything about Savitar showing up. Or then, hey, look, Savitar showed up. All right, and the ads for next week's episode. I'm like, oh, this could be a good one, but it also could be like, I don't know.
Speaking of ring, the Iris not saying yes or no was kind of a dumb cliffhanger.
Oh, I can't. I didn't even realize. Did they put that on a cliffhanger? I didn't realize she.
Well, they didn't.
She didn't answer it. So.
They didn't show her answering.
Oh, and then it went to the lightning bolt thing.
I assume the yes was implied.
Yeah, I was going to say the yes is kind of implied, but
whatever. Can't remember anything else about this episode. I know Caitlin didn't do anything, but that's hardly a rarity on the show.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh, without the male interest for her in the episode, there wasn't anything they could ever do, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well done, guys. All right. I think we can move on to the scorecards after all. Holy crap. This is a nice streak run. We're getting through these shows much faster than we used to. That's because of a Nasaj isn't here, I'm guessing. No, I'm just kidding. So, Vicky, what would you grade this week's episode of The Flash?
I will give it a 4. That's a good improvement over last week.
Okay. Cade?
I will give this week a 4.
Okay, interesting. Daniel?
I'm also going to give it a 4. I thought some things weren't perfect, but there were a few things that I thought were fun enough, like Barry doing all those combinations like with his speed powers was kind of fun, and just some other stuff, just nice touches that made the episode feel more enjoyable than the average one has been. Definitely better than last week.
I am actually going to join the crowd for a change. I mean, I can mock things here and there, but nothing really bothered me too much this time around. Other than maybe wanting a bit more Grodd time, I guess. But I think I gave last week a 4 anyway, so I'm going to do the same here. So I'm also going to give it a 4. Okay, now normally this is when we would go to our third show of the evening. Actually, are we going to still go to our third show of the evening? Are we jumping? Are we jumping to the other segment now, Dan?
Yeah, let's jump to that quick, so then I'll roll out after that.
Right, because Dan was not able to watch most of the third show we'll be talking about. So instead, we're going to skip ahead to what's oftentimes our favorite moment on the show. Of course, I'm talking about
the Speed Weed Hands-Off Moment of the Week.
So with the Speed Weed Moment, let's start with Cade.
Okay, this is something that's starting to bother me about these shows. Is there a city in the Earth, the Arrowverse, that is not located in a woodsy mountain area? Central City has been shown to be like near plains and a river and water, and next thing you know, it's up on top of a hill surrounded by trees when Grodd's looking at it. Can we make locations that look different? Every week it's woods and mountains in these places, and they're in different parts of the country. They shouldn't all look the same. That's mine.
I like that you had to say it's mine.
Oh, that's not the one I was going to do. Damn it, I did the wrong one.
Kate, it was a little lame. You want to do over? We have time.
The other one's not any better. It's just Supergirl using a subway train for that stupid train scene that annoyed the crap out of me.
Oh. Shut up. Stick with the forest crap. Vicky.
All right. My gripe with this week is with Arrow, primarily with the she has not been very prominent this season, and they had her gone for a good stretch, and they bring her back for what, 2 episodes, and now she's gone again.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that. That's a really good point. Son of a bitches. Dan?
All right, mine is from Supergirl. When Scott suggested we bring Jason back to the podcast, I felt that was inconsistent with the character, and I don't know, it just didn't work for me. No, from Arrow, I've only seen like a third of the episode, but there's a scene where they're in the Arrow cave and they're watching like the whatever Ollie's impeachment proceedings or whatever. They're watching on some like 40-inch flat screen TV, but they have it like set into some kind of desk at like a weird 30-degree angle, so they all have to kind of like stand like above it and a few feet away. And it's just like the stupidest place to put a TV ever. Just like, okay.
It's part of Politically's computer setup.
Yeah. It's dumb. Very dumb.
Alright, well, I'm actually going to crib an idea I picked up from someone else. Someone else had pointed it out on another group page I was on. And I was amused by it, and the more I thought about it, the dumber I realized it was. So let's go back to the very beginning of this week's Flash episode. And I mean the very beginning of the episode. When Iris comes down and Barry's gone, you know, breakfast happy. And he's got plates and piles of waffles and French toast and pancakes and all this stuff. And you think, oh wow, he was able to do all this because he's the Flash. And then you start to think, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter how fast you are, you're not able to make things cook any faster. So what the hell does the fact that you're the Flash have to do with being able to make so much stuff at the same time? It made no fucking sense the more I thought about it. It's like, That's kind of stupid. It's not like you've got 20 different burners going on, and it's going to take a pancake the same amount of time to cook, no matter what he does or whatever it is. It has nothing to do with speed. Speed is not a function here. Idiots.
I always wondered that when like they're going to like make some kind of food run, like, oh, they just like, you went there and like they just, because you can run fast, like you can bring a fully cooked pizza back like 30 seconds later, or like,
yeah,
you know,
they do
10 beer meal, like, yeah, just, I doubt it. Unless they go a Little Caesars or something, then I could see that, but I don't think that's quite what they're doing.
Oh, I'm sorry, I threw up in my mouth there. That's
or
bad.
Papa
John's.
That would be the worst.
Ugh.
Put in the vomiting sounds. So, yeah, just and oh, by the way, just really quick, Cade, have they gotten into the thing on this show where? I know one of the conceits they did in later years with The Flash was, and they even did it on the cartoons, where he has to, like, eat a lot because of the whole calories, because of all the speed. Have they really gotten into that on the show, or have they kind of just...
They started with it.
In season one.
Like, in the early season one, when he started really having to train, they constantly talked about how much he eats. And then it just kind of disappeared, so we don't have to talk about it. But it was there in the early parts of the series.
I thought so, because then if they at least made a reference that he's actually going to eat all this himself, it would make sense. But no, of course they don't. They're just going to go eat food and bang or something.
And then also in the Supergirl crossover last season, they kind of allude to that where they're like they're both always eating and stuff. So
right. Although she shouldn't.
She doesn't have to. She stands in the sun and gets her power.
She just needs to get a suntan, that's all.
That's not how her power works.
Although they never do get tan, although they need to be in the yellow sun. I wonder why. Anyway, okay.
I've got a question for you guys about Flash that came up while I was listening to you guys talk. Just for a question for you and for Scott and Cade. Who was that? What's the deal with that Earth 19 speedster that we saw briefly talking to Gypsy? You guys have any theories about that?
Earth 19.
Did I miss something?
Who she was talking to when Cisco came to get her?
Yeah, it was some like, you know, somebody wearing like a Flash looking red light thing, but like there was a hood covering like, you know, half
I'm
of his
assuming
face.
That's kind of just who she like works for, like as part of her like enforcement.
Yeah, but he definitely ran away. You know, like you know, speedster run away.
Apparently, I looked down at the wrong time and missed that.
I think I missed it too. I was tired.
Anyway, Dan, your answer is we have no idea.
I was getting ready to watch.
Well, I already deleted it, so.
I was getting ready to watch Legion. I'm sorry.
That's a viable reason. I mean,
especially this week. Oh my god. Dan, have you watched Legion yet? By the way.
Yeah, I watched it last night. I just couldn't form any coherent thoughts.
Yeah, I was going to say if you were as tired as I know you were, which is why we were actually holding off on recording that podcast until Saturday morning. That might not have been the best episode to watch if you were like really wiped out and tired. You know, especially for someone who's got like Twin Peaks on the brain the way you do. I think you need to be more wide awake for that one. So,
but yep,
you still have time. Okay, I think we can wrap up the Speedweed Moment of the Week segment that we popped ahead of time. Dan, are you now going to be leaving us since you didn't finish this week's Arrow?
Yep, I'm going to take off. So, good night, Cade, Vicky, and Scott.
Bye.
Bye, Dan.
Good night, Jace. I mean, Dan. Good night. It was wishful thinking. No, sorry. Doesn't make sense. Well, I'm going to assume the door is going to close on Dan, and he'll probably insert some funny sound effect or something. So, let's get on with things with the third show in this week's Triple Threat of CW Superhero Series, and that would be Arrow. So this week's episode, which was titled Fighting Fire with Fire, and you know, it's hard not to hear the word impeachment nowadays without a big fat smile splitting my face from ear to ear. But that's what Ollie is facing after the cover-up of Detective, really, that guy's death, due to the shoot-first, but face-a-tribunal-later methods of the Green Arrow. Now, DA Adrian Chase agrees to defend Ollie in the hearings, since there's certainly no conflict of interest there, and apparently Star City is short on lawyers. Now, every person who testifies makes you think that Ollie's middle name should be Julius or something, because clearly OJ is guilty. And the peekaboo, gun-happy character of the season, Vigilante, he seems to be convinced as well as he tries to take out Ollie's limo. Of course, this being TV, people just get a little banged up as opposed to how a real-life crash would almost certainly result in several fatalities. But the Big V wasn't counting on some meta-help as he gets blown backward by a canary cry, which apparently chips his ski goggles. So there's no slopes for Vigilante's future, and he does get away when the other cops show up. Now, meanwhile, Renee continues to make fun of Curtis playing with his balls. Also, Curtis is actually working on Mr. Terrific's T-spheres. We dabble in the conflicted and increasingly, or supposedly darker motivations of a couple of the ladies on the series. Namely, Thea, who wants to graduate to blackmailing one of the politicos at the hearing. And Felicity, who is maybe just a twee bit blind to how much power she wields with that Pandora treasure trove of damning information on everyone. Now, I think Felicity doubled up on her computer classes back in school, so maybe she missed a few history sessions. So she doesn't remember the whole thing about absolute power corrupting absolutamente, or whatever that saying went. So we get back to the action portions of the show. We get the showdown between Prometheus and Vigilante. And then we get one of the first genuine shocks of the season. There is an unmasking, and we finally see that it's Adrian Chase. What? Wait. He's not Vigilante, as he is in the comics. He's freaking Prometheus! Sound the what alarm on this show. Meanwhile, Ollie's juggling at another WTF... what the fuck? Is wrong with you situation with Thea, as well as instructing Felicity to undo the damage her hacking caused generic reporter gal, who at least seems to be working, unlike certain other female reporters on a couple other CW shows. He does come up with a plan, and I'm sure many folks like me thought this was going to be the moment where Ollie comes clean and reveals himself to be the Green Arrow. But instead, they rip yet another page from The Dark Knight, and instead paint the Green Arrow as public enemy number one, who killed one of their own. By the end, Ollie has avoided impeachment. Curtis was so wrapped up in his balls that he couldn't pick up on the fact that his hubby was meeting him to divorce him. Felicity decides to go full-throttle hacktivist by joining up with the organization Helix. And just as Susan's going to go meet up with Ollie for a nosh and some nookie, much like a stock character out of 24, Adrian Chase shows up in super creepy mode, and you know something bad is going to go down. Oh yeah, the flashbacks were actually kind of cool this week yet again, as Wiggy Ollie is able to provide evidence that Gregor was keeping millions of rubles from Kovar without spreading it out among his Bratva brothers. So by the end, sides are drawn between Gregor and Anatoly, and then the shooting begins. Now, I know that was pretty much a big-ass recap for a big-ass episode, and speaking of big-asses, I think we might have lost Cade to some Skype disruptions just now. So, Vicky, do you want to just soldier on with me, and if Cade is able to rejoin us, that's great, and if not, then he'll just be the two of us for the rest.
Let's see. Go on and see if he comes back.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, interrupt the proceedings, so we'll just talk a little bit slower than normal for a moment. It's called stalling. Well, I'll make, like, Warren Beatty here, you might have picked up, I was trying to stretch out that recap a bit more, which made it probably sound more disjointed than I intended, which is too bad, because it was kind of funny. But anyway, let's start off with something I really want Kay to talk about, but, you know, hopefully he'll get back. Oh, sounds like he can't get back. All right, maybe I'll do a Cade impression for the rest of the podcast. So the whole Vigilante Prometheus thing. So, Vicky, were you pleased with what I would imagine was a surprise? Or, you know, how did that work for you?
I was. I was flabbergasted because, you know, Cade has been... you know, saying all along Chase is Vigilante, and he turns out to be Prometheus. so that was a very big shock. And definitely an interesting twist, because, I mean, we were saying, you know, we don't quite believe that it was, you know, that guy's illegitimate son or whatever. So it, you know, proved us right, and that fight between them on the rooftop was pretty funny. We're like, I want to kill Oliver. No, I want to kill Oliver.
Well, I did see articles that came out shortly after the episode aired from the people behind the scenes at Arrow, you know, the showrunner, etc., who loved the fact that they were going to do that. They planned that all along, that they were going to screw with people, you know, i.e. comic book fans, because there was an expectation that we know that Vigilante in the comics, back from the 80s to now, was Adrian Chase. But as I've said in other instances, this is a TV show. It's not the comics. They don't have to be, you know, stick to canon here. You know, they're doing their own thing. And I really kind of love that they did that. They tricked me because I was positive that they were going the obvious route, and now they didn't.
Which
of course kind of makes me wonder who the vigilante is, and if we're ever going to actually find out who he is or not. Although, quite honestly, I like the idea if we never find out who the vigilante is. I think that would actually be kind of cool, because didn't they have that one episode where they tried to unmask him, and maybe there was some sort of booby trap or something? Did something happen where he wasn't able to unmask him? I can't remember what it was.
I think so, yeah. But yeah, no, I definitely, I like that they kind of pulled the rug out from under us with that. With something like that, it's kind of the good kind of surprise.
Yeah, I mean, this being a show that at times in the past has surprised us, and we might not have been too thrilled with the surprise, this was one of the times I was like, oh, okay, that's different, that's interesting, and you might have made up for something that was, I felt at least, was exceedingly lame for the last several weeks. So the fact that they kind of, you know, came out of nowhere with that one, no typing, I see you back, was pretty cool. And in case you guys out there don't know what the heck I was saying just now, Cade, who had been knocked out of our call, so me and Vicky were left to, you know, carry the flag here, has just returned. So other than missing my somewhat awesome but kind of screwy recap, we've been talking about the entire Vigilante Prometheus reveal situation, whatever. I want to go to you in a second. I just want to say one last thing about it that I thought was actually kind of interesting about the episode. That we could have an entire scene that was basically Vigilante versus Prometheus, I thought was kind of cool. That it wasn't any member of Team Arrow, per se. It was just those two weird masked guys fighting each other for a little while.
That was a cool scene, yeah.
So kudos to those two stuntmen. And because you know it's not the actors. I mean, come on.
I do like that, you know, Chase turned out to be one or the other, because just with his character, it always gave the implication that there was something else going on with him. And now that we know the secret, quote unquote, it just adds that secret layer of just creepiness to his conversations with Oliver, because he's like, no, you're my friend.
Yes. So, Kate, now that you're back, so you would have been my first one to go to. No offense, Vicky, because I wanted to get your opinion on the how they kind of used the comic book knowledge against us.
They did, and it was wonderfully done. That how they played that out, because you put Adrian Chase in the show, you have Vigilante show up. Everyone's expecting those two to be the same, and then you turn around and Adrian Chase is Prometheus. Well done on that. Well done to them for using every bit of information we've had for years about this character and completely turning it on us. And I didn't expect it. And honestly, from what I was really expecting this Prometheus reveal to finally be a letdown when it happened.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was caught me off guard, because I never actually expected that. Because there was no need to. You, in your head, the whole time, I'm going, oh, he's Vigilante. And when I see the trailer for last week, I'm like, why is Vigilante attacking Oliver? It doesn't make any... Now it makes perfect sense. Now, every little question about that plays beautifully. And also, like Vicky said, you look back now at this entire season, the way Adrian has interacted with Oliver, being right there with him the whole time, the DA is ready to stand up with you. And it was all part of his game. This beautiful game Prometheus is playing, like, now you realize the game that we saw Prometheus playing with Oliver as the Arrow was not even the best one. The best one's what he's done as Adrian Chase, getting close to Oliver, making that friendship. It makes the whole storyline that much better now that we have that point. And that makes every worry I had about the Prometheus reveal just go away. Because it's like, you've made a wonderful story that with this ties so many things together, just makes so much sense and works really well.
And also what's really kind of cool about it right now is we know, but they don't.
Right.
And it's going to be interesting, because I don't think they're not going to have that reveal anytime soon. So it's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. I mean, I know there's a situation that seems to be happening between Adrian Chase and the reporter gal. But even so, I think they're not going to know that he's Prometheus for a good chunk of time, which is going to make that very... It'll be interesting to actually be ahead of the characters and then wonder how that's going to eventually play out. So I'm really glad... I mean, mainly I'm glad that the lame explanation from Prometheus turned out not to be true, because I thought that was the most anticlimactic reveal of all time. But of course, I also was saying, I believe I said, unless you see him take off his mask, it's not a reveal. You don't have a masked character and then reveal him by just telling us who he is. He has to take off the mask. Another thing I think you weren't here for, I think I was saying it before you came back. I know you're going to agree with me on this one. I think they should never tell us who Vigilante is.
Right, yeah, definitely. Keep it a secret. Just keep it a secret. Even if he comes back and plays a role, don't tell us.
Right, because like I was saying, they already had at least one time where they would try to take his mask off and they were unable to, you know, kind of like an old Batman gag, actually, if I recall. So I just like the idea that he's more just this unknown, weird figure and that they don't quite know who he is. Because I don't think revealing him will ever be satisfying, because he's not going to be a character on the show.
You know? Right.
He's not going to be Tommy either. So it's like, you know what? I don't need to know who he is. That's okay, you know. So anyway. So beyond the Vigilante Prometheus thing, which I obviously was a rather huge thing here, also about how the whole storyline plays out as far as dealing with, you know, the impeachment, the Vigilante / Prometheus going after him, what Ollie's plan turned out to be, and really what the hell is going on with Thea. Although what Vicky was saying in our speed read moment rings very true right this moment. Like, really, you brought back Thea and now she's gonna leave again? Isn't she always leaving? It feels like she's always leaving the show. Yeah. And like you finally made that character decent after a couple seasons of meh, and then she keeps leaving. You know, when she stopped doing the disco crap, she became an interesting character to me. So Vicky, what was your take? I mean, obviously, I already know your opinion on the Thea thing, but just how the rest of the episode played out as far as, you know, what Ollie's ultimate plan was, and I really have something I want to say about that, but I want to hear you guys talk first. Just your take on all that crap.
It's going to be interesting to see them try and operate as a team now, you know, because once again, he is being hunted by the police, even more so now, though, that they think, you know, that he's been branded a cop killer. I was a little surprised because, you know, Ollie's been trying to bring the Green Arrow into legitimacy, and he had pretty much achieved that, and now it's gone again.
Right. Cade, one thing I think you would have appreciated that you missed when you went Skype bye-bye before was during my recap, I kind of mocked what Ollie chooses to do by essentially saying, well, basically they're ripping off the Dark Knight again.
Oh, good, because that's what I was about to say, because that's exactly what they did.
Well, I'm glad you saying it again would have been weird. It's the Harvey Dent, now he's on the run from the police thing all over again. You know,
Harvey Dented himself. He did it to himself. He was both sides. It's like the whole time I'm playing, like you have Arrow, a moment in the comics where Ollie could choose to do something like coming out and saying he's an Arrow and dealing with that way. No, you're just going to rip off Batman again. Come on.
Yeah. I personally thought this was all leading up to he's going to reveal who he is. This is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I thought it was. Although. Even if he reveals who he is, I don't know if that quite solves his problem. I don't know if that stops the impeachment, much less anything else at that point. I think
probably not.
But then again, these being the shows of bad plans, it just felt like that was the moment they were building to, because again, we happen to know that they do that in the comics, but again, you know, like Adrian Chase isn't the Vigilante on this show, they didn't do that here either. Again, I'm part of me is still like, okay, so he threw Arrow under the bus, as he put it. Still not quite sure why that should let him off the hook. because he still made a bad decision that was kind of sort of corrupt. But I guess they gave him a break for it, whatever. But I was a little iffy on it. I mean, I don't know.
Well, the problem I have with it is, even if when the storyline ties up, he's finished with Prometheus, it's not like the city's going to go, oh, this Prometheus guy did it, made him look bad. Like, that's not going to come out. So you've basically put him right back to where he was in season one, where he is just a vigilante. And now one who's a cop killer to the city, it's hard to walk yourself back from that. And that's why I'm like, I don't think that's the best plan, because walking back that what you did there is going to be... it's just going to be more next season dealing with it, because if they wrap this up in a tidy bow at the end of the season, it's not going to feel right. It's going to feel too easy for them to do something like that. Whereas with this choice that he made, it should not be an easy thing to have be go away. Hmm. That should be a problem they have to deal with.
We'll see, because you know with the skilled writers that they have on this show, I'm very confident they will find a way to deal with this plot in a way that will be ultimately satisfying. And no, it's not going to happen. It's just going to be annoying. but he can't remain a criminal, because how is he going to do all the crossovers later on next year and stuff? Yeah. The Flash is going to be hanging out with a criminal? Come on, they got to figure this shit out. All right, let's get to... Before we close up shop, let's get to some of the more fun things about the episode. I can't believe I'm going to use this phrase, but I kept saying it during the recap, which you also missed. I think we need, Cade, I think we need to talk about Curtis and his balls.
Yes.
And Vicky, I'm going to probably want to, because I'll take advantage of the gender here, kind of want to talk a little bit about Felicity with you as far as her whole hacktivism thing and where they went with that. But... Let's go with the geeky thing first, because that's, once again, we're dipping into the comics. But forget the comics. They're finally maybe doing something that will probably help make Mr. Terrific a viable member of the team, as opposed to the usual punching or kicking bag that he tends to be on the show. The T-spheres, that was kind of cool. They're finally doing it, right?
It was really awesome. And they're the early version, so we can probably see more. But just the fact that he had them, and in the fight, Wild Dog and Diggle are down. He's the one who stopped Vigilante. He's the one who saved the day.
Yep.
Because as he did, he played to his strengths. He made those the T-spheres. And he goes, I don't have to aim. They do it themselves. And it just smacks him. I'm like, that's what we wanted him all along. I didn't want him to be out there fighting, because that's not... the comic Mr. Terrific can do it. This Curtis can't.
Right.
But what Curtis can do is invent shit, make things do amazing things, and finally it's like, oh, I remembered. I'm a scientist who can invent things, and he finally does it. The T-spheres were around a long time ago, and now he finally comes back, and it's so good that we got to see him. And I like how they have their different little – they are different from each other. But it was good that we finally got there, and I hope they realize to keep using them and don't they just suddenly disappear for like 7 episodes. And then someone goes, hey, Curtis, don't you have those little balls you use somewhere? Please don't do that. Make this part of his usual character.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they're not going to be like, oh, it's too expensive. Like, no, you just have to have the little spheres floating around him.
Yeah.
It's not going to – don't tell me it's going to – there's hardly any special effects on the show. You already got rid of Ragman. So hopefully they can keep him around, because then it's like, okay, that's pretty cool, because the T-spheres can really do a whole lot of stuff, if I recall. You know, we're talking like beyond Batman level gadgetry here. So that would be, again, that would be kind of neat. You know, I like that. I always like the team will have this one guy who has this amazing tech with him, and another guy who's got a pair of guns and a hockey mask. So, you know, it's like the opposite ends of the spectrum as far as your heroes and tech are concerned.
I will say I appreciated that Renee saw that he was being too harsh and dialed it back.
Yes! I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I kind of enjoyed the Renee and Curtis interactions this week more than I usually do. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Renee, as I don't think anyone is here, but they were kind of funny. And yes, And part of it is because of all the balls comments that did make me laugh. I love that they were getting away with that, you know, because, you know, it makes me, it's like fart humor. It's always going to make me laugh.
Because you're juvenile now.
Yes, no, I am. Oh, pff, damn right I am.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear my recap? Anyway, I think I said something like, so Curtis is playing with his balls. Oh, and he's also working on the T-spheres or something like that. Now, Felicity, on the other hand. So this whole thing with the Pandora box, and she gets like the, she has like the conversation with Diggle, which I guess was a bit more substantial than the conversation she had with Rory, you know, a couple weeks ago. So it made, maybe it worked a little bit better this time around. But then she makes kind of a significant decision here. So Vicky, what did you think of what they're doing with Felicity here? Because it is giving her something else to do also. It's giving her more than just being, you know, just the Overwatch or whatever the she is on the show.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good because, you know, I mean, yeah, it's giving her something to do, like we've been saying. But it showed, I think her conversation with John showed a lot of her reasoning behind it. And it's not just, oh, you know, this has stirred this up, you know, this had stirred this back up in her just because she reconnected with the other hacktivists. But, you know, like he was saying, Billy's death, you know, affected her. It, you know, she's lost a lot of her empathy because it really hurt her. And then just she's seen everyone else cross that line so often that she's like, well, then why can't I do that? And so I definitely think this is taking her on an interesting journey character-wise. So,
yeah, I'm curious where the Helix thing will go. That's what I'm curious. I mean, I really want to see if it really goes somewhere really substantial, as opposed to just you know a bunch of other computer geeks that are just like, you know, hanging out with her or something. I want to see where they go with this, and you're right. It's interesting because you've got I think they even mentioned in the episode, you know, you've got the issues where both Ollie and even to a certain extent, especially in the last year or so, Diggle have kind of gone to the dark side or really given into their worst nature. And Felicity was supposed to be, you know, the best of them, so to speak. Although, you know, she is responsible for the death of... Who's making that noise? Stop it! She's responsible for the death of, like, thousands of people in Rory's old town, whatever. But it's I think that what makes the Felicity thing interesting to me now, and I think it was presented better in this episode than it had been previously. So maybe just Diggle got at it a little bit better with her than what Rory did. I thought they did a somewhat better job of presenting the ethical situation here, and what it's not just the fact that she has all this information that she's got. You know, the goods on, you know, a billion people in the world. It's how she chooses to use it. And the fact that it comes off like she's going to go about things in a very insidious way, whether it be blackmail or threatening, that's the problem. That's where you're slipping over to the darker side. But it's interesting because, like, it becomes one of those, well, what would you do? You know, how do you be a hero and have this kind of information? What are you supposed to do with it? And I think that, I don't know how much they'll explore it on the show. You know, hopefully they do a better job with that than, say, I don't know, gun control. But sure. It did make me more interested in it now than I had been in previous episodes, which is saying something, I think, for this show at least. Cade. Yeah. Or Vicky.
Vicky, you can go. You were going to speak.
Oh, no. Go ahead, Cade.
No, I don't have anything to say. Scott covered it.
Yeah, no, that's thank you.
Worst podcasters ever. No.
That's kind of why I said let Vicky go, because I didn't have anything.
I know. This is why we suck. Anyway, no, we're fine. We're great. So beyond that, was there anything else that really stood out? Good, bad, or whatever about this episode that we wanted to cover before we get to the scorecards?
No, I think we're good.
Alrighty then. Then, with our limited slate of people to talk about it, Vicky, what was your grade for this week's Arrow?
I'm gonna give it a 4.
Deja. Cade?
I have to give this Arrow a 5. They paid off really well on something they've been planning for a long time. So I have to give them credit for that. The episode is pretty good otherwise.
Oh, interesting. This is going to be an interesting grading situation. I would say with this episode, they gave us a couple of surprises, and the stupidity was kept to a relative minimum. I really enjoyed this one. So I'm going to break out a 4.5 on this one. So, hey, guess what? The three of us graded it, and Vicky was the lowest. When does that happen?
This is so weird.
This is the bizarre.
You know what, though?
This is the Bizarro Universe
it's
episode.
Because of the Theonances and hardly any Dinah.
That's true. You know, the Dinah thing is. I'm talking. Okay. The Who Wants to Be a Millionaire music will keep playing, maybe. It's interesting because I, on one hand, obviously I want them to do more with Dinah, obviously, because the actress seems like she's at least decent, and I want to see where they go with that. Although I do know a lot of people who bailed on the show because, like Black Canary fans are just annoyed, like, okay, I'm not going through this again, screw this, and they've actually dumped the show, whatever. I'm just curious where they're going with it, but I do like the little bits we get with her. I mean, basically, I think they just figured out a better way to do the Sonic Cry now, and it's really kind of cool as opposed to before. But
the one apprehension I have is I hope they don't try to use her character to undermine the police department, since you know they'll be hunting for the Arrow now. I don't want her to have to turn into a character who's joined the police to do something better, and then the group uses her to undermine what they're doing. I don't want that.
Yeah, get ready, they're going to do that.
I know. I'm just saying they don't want it.
Well, then there's that. Wait, I'm kind of confused. Is Quentin no longer a member of the police department now?
No, I don't think he is.
No.
He resigned.
Since he's the deputy mayor.
He's just
the
deputy mayor. He's no connection.
When the Laurel thing, when it was going to come out what she was, remember he signed a document and resigned his... commission officer.
All right, okay, that makes sense. You know what's weird? Something happened on one of... Oh, it was the Arrow episode. Why am I talking about this after we did the grades? You see, we screwed this up. I did have a question that literally just popped into my head. Didn't write a note about it. I was just trying to remember something that struck me as odd in the episode. And I'm sure this is just basically a memory glitch on my part. So I'm going to ask you guys. Because I know one or both of you had the show better, more committed to memory than I do, apparently. So when Ollie is in the hospital, and he's talking to that doctor, the female doctor, who clearly knows that he's Green Arrow.
Right.
When did this happen? I don't remember there being a doctor who knew who he was.
I don't remember her.
I don't remember her either.
Okay. No clue. I'm not crazy.
Like, when I'm watching the scene, in my head I'm going, yeah, you're not crazy. I don't remember this ever being addressed because I'm trying to go, where was this covered?
I should have Googled it. Maybe I'll do it after the podcast because I don't feel like typing right now. But I feel that's pretty significant that there would be the civilian who rarely, if ever, interacts with him who clearly knows he's Green Arrow. I mean, because I was listening to the conversation, because when she first said something to Darla, I was like, wait, does she know who he is? And then the more she went on, I was like, okay, she clearly knows who he is. Why don't I remember her? And they were even made a point of saying her name. I think her name is Dr. Schwartz. I was like, oh my God, there's actually someone Jewish in Star City. Get out of town. But but I don't know. All right, I'm just wondering if maybe you guys remember it, because I know I've forgotten some things over the last few years because, you know, old. But, okay, I will look that up, and maybe we can comment on it on our next podcast, that she was featured in, you know, episode 7 of season 3 for like 5 minutes or something. I don't know. But I got a feeling someone dropped the ball somewhere. Okay, I think we have completed our run of these three shows, so we can wrap this sucker up. Other than telling you guys, watch Justice League Action. It's really good. Okay, anyway, back to wrapping up the podcast. So if you enjoyed this podcast, you will enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. When you go on Facebook, type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can like the page and join the conversation about shows both silly and serious. You can also find us on iTunes pretty much the same way. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed and rate and review us there. It would be nice. I can't remember the last time we got a rating or a review. Unless it's a shitty one, then I don't really want it. And finally, you can also follow us on the Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. We send out the links to the show as well as occasionally comment on things if we feel so inclined. And that's about it for those spiels, although, again, I keep mentioning this, but I think it deserves mention. I do appreciate when I discover that there are our few listeners do actually sometimes go out of their way to retweet, you know, our links or mention things on Facebook for us. Hey, anything that gets us even a couple more listeners, and hopefully it's not one of our bad podcasts, is always appreciated. Vicky, before we go any further, I let you do the plug for one of the places you can find our podcast lately.
Yes, you can find us on popculthq.com. And I will say on the this weekend on the Pop Cult HQ social media, you will see lots of content from Emerald City Comic Con.
Oh, awesome. Was that covered by the famous Tori Ann?
No. One of our other writers is up there in up there this weekend.
Okay. With my Glory fan. No, I don't know. I'm just making shit up now. Cool. Looking forward to maybe I'll actually even take the time to read that myself because you know it's a good site because you know they're supporting us and you guys are retweeting us as well, which is really kind of cool. So I greatly appreciate it. Okay. With that, I will start our good nights. I will say good night to the two of you. Thanks for being able to stick around this long. And Dan and I will be back to do the Legion podcast that we weren't able to do last night because Dan was so tired. But we will do it on Saturday morning and hopefully get that out later that day because that should be a doozy of a podcast. My brain hurts just reading my notes on that episode. So that should be, hopefully that will be a worthwhile listen. But with that said, good night to the two of you and good night to everybody else out there.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you for having us for episode 163.
Of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whizzle, yes indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat. Beat the speed of light and you can't beat that. The
flash, the flash,
meet the mighty flash.
The flash, the flash,
in a fight he'll smash and crash. Smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy. Thief or robber, the world's fastest. Yeah, man, the Flash.
The unbeatable Flash. The unbeatable Flash.
No one knows Barry Allen is his real name. Works with the police, justice is his aim. Wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it. When danger threatens, he'll switch in a minute. The Flash,
the Flash, the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash.
The Flash, the Flash,
in a fight he'll smash.
Flash!